My friend and I shared a copy of the game, and I would pass back and forth a memory card with our saves. And one day he told me he lost all of our saves. I was truly gutted. When I asked him how such a thing could happen, he told me that his grandmother had cleaned the inside of his memory card with cleaning solution, and somehow that wiped the saves. I'm sorry. This just sounds like such a bullshit story.
From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
So welcome on into what is now episode 10, unexpectedly, because we recorded an extra rant episode before this. So this is going to be the Metal Gear Solid episode, which is Hideo Kojima's opus magnum. It's his Mona Lisa. It's his Statue of David. It's his Sistine Chapel. It is his masterpiece. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. So, Jamie, I want to start with some facts, right? Because right, I want to get your juices flowing a bit early, okay? So did you know that when they were developing Metal Gear Solid, right, the early builds of Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 dev kit didn't work at all? So like it was constantly crashing. The PS1 dev kit wasn't able to handle it. And the game was genuinely almost cancelled very early on because it was like it won't run on the PS1 dev kit. Then there was revisions to the dev kit or something, and then it started running much better. Kojima was brought in on the Metal Gear game. And it was originally supposed to be like a shooter. So the original Metal Gear before Metal Gear Solid. And it was originally supposed to be like a shooter type game. And you could only have the character, Snake, plus three enemies on screen at one time. And then Kojima thought like this won't really work because you can't have like a big action scene with three other characters. And then if one of them is a dog, you have two characters and so on. So instead he reworked the game to be like a sneaking game. So then you could work with three characters on screen because you could make it quite elaborate in that way. So that's how kind of the whole stealth genre became Metal Gear Solid. And when they were in development, right, you know the very famous codec call, right? This is like the ultimate thing because they managed to integrate the codec call to be like the tutorial, to be how you save the game. And it kind of reminds me of Dead Space. It was this whole immersive experience where you were never in a menu, really, you know? You never had text really popping up saying, do this.
Yeah.
Like you had someone calling you. And basically like the team is the support character for the character. So Solid Snake, right? But it's also your support through the whole thing. So you get totally involved because you're calling these people for advice or tutorials or what to do. And it's like how you solve the game. And then there is your support crew. And it makes you feel like you're on this espionage mission and you're like, I'm stuck in this room and it's filled with gas. What do I do? And it's like, I can try and override the door lock. And you know, it's like you gotta constantly be talking to your team all the time. And the early idea for Kojima, but they just couldn't get it to work. This was never like planned. It was just what he wanted. He wanted that the codec call would happen over your phone, your real phone, so that the game would call your phone. You would have to go and pick up the phone, answer, and then like the general would be talking to you on like an automated thing, right? But they couldn't get it to work. They had like automated callers back then, but you're talking like a game, trying to communicate with an automated call center, trying to communicate with like, so you would have to somehow have the PS1 plugged into your landline and the call would come to your landline.
Pretty ambitious technology, like.
Very ambitious. Like, today it would be incredible. It would be amazing, you know?
Just imagine if that happened back then, your mom answering the phone.
Listen, there's not much time.
Inserted into controller port 2. It's like, what are you on about?
Yeah, so yeah, that was a very, very ambitious one, right? But so that's kind of my tidbits on the early development, right? What I also noticed when I was playing is like there were some parts where if I closed my eyes, I heard like Geralt from The Witcher 3. So Snake and Geralt. They're played by they're played by two different people. So David Hayter played Snake. And then Doug Cockle played The Witcher Geralt. But if you listen, like, I wanted to like put together an audio clip of like one of them talking after the other. And you have to tell me when it changes from like Snake to Geralt. For me, it's like, it's so close in the voices. It's like that raspy, husky, oh, I don't know.
But yeah, the guttural kind of.
Yeah. I'm going to need to think about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're obviously very good at doing the Witcher voices.
Well, wasn't 80% of Geralt's kind of voice acting is just a grunt.
Grunt, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same with Snake. He's a lot of sounds suspicious.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one thing. The second thing is like, this was a top-down game, right? But then all of a sudden, every so often, you'd enter these like super cinematic scenes, right? And did you know that in these like cinematic scenes, you know the way when you're walking around, you can press R1 and it changes the Snake's perspective?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You can do that in the cutscenes. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
So when the cutscenes are playing, if you press R1, you change to it. Yeah, I have
it
in the notes.
On your notes.
Which is quite cool.
It's like, really?
And what's interesting for me is like, if you look at what came out around the same time, you look at Resident Evil 1, right? So Resident Evil 1 is so clunky to play. If you go back and play it now, it's near impossible. It's like tank controls, you know, terrible. And what's interesting is Metal Gear Solid should have been the same. Like, you're in a game where you have to stand still to shoot, you know, you're the same kind of fixed perspective almost. I know it changes a little bit more than Resident Evil, but even so, like, how did that work so well? How is the shooting so fluid? How does it all work? Explain.
I don't know. I didn't develop the game. But like, when I think of like Metal Gear Solid, what was really kind of, I don't know, was it a good or a bad thing? Obviously, you can see where the enemies are on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that you could really correlate distance from what you can see on screen to how far they are on the radar. So what I kind of annoyed me or happened to me, you know, many, many times is that you'd get in their visual range of view before you see them on your screen.
Yeah, this is something that takes a while to get used to. So like, you can be in their field of view on the radar, but have no idea where they are. Which is kind of like a double perspective thing. You're constantly trying to chase down. And then sometimes you can be within complete view of them, but they're too far away to see you, so to speak, you know?
Quote,
which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, yeah. But no, that's quite interesting. So tell me, you start the game, right? And you open this, you know, this initial cutscene before you even get to the menu. And you hear like Shadow Moses Island. And straight away you have like the warm fuzzies and the nostalgia, and you're like, Shadow Moses, the island, you know. That was like, playing that as a kid, it was like, oh my God, what's Shadow Moses? You know, it sounds so like mystical and like deceptive at the same time. I don't know. It just sounds so cool. Maybe it's just the nostalgia.
Mystical.
Yeah, deceptively mystical.
Like the opening cinematic, or like when you're kind of coming in, you know, obviously swimming under the water. It's that atmosphere building straight off the bat, and then you're getting out of the water and you can hear that music in your head.
Yeah.
And he puts us back to the wall. Metal Gear Solid is certainly one of those.
And you get your first Kodak call in.
Yeah. Like, it's, for me, Metal Gear Solid is like iconic childhood growing up. Like, I can remember, just because I love watching people play games, and I can just remember so vividly my brother playing that game. And us playing it together and struggling in it. But I can remember, and what really kind of sings to me about that is when you're at, I know we're skipping a little bit ahead, but when you're doing Raven, his first fight, when you're in kind of the in around the containers, and us struggling to beat him until we figured that we could use the Nikita rockets to
take him out. Can you use the Nikita rockets for him?
You did. He's that's a yeah. It's
no,
like,
we'll get to it. Okay. Because I had very specific ways that I beat all the bosses. And that's the great thing about it. There was multiple ways to beat all the bosses.
Yeah.
So there wasn't like, oh no, you can't use this weapon here. You know, it was like, you could do it any way you wanted to do it.
Yeah,
and there's multiple ways to get through the game, which is really weird at the time, you know. And there's also like, you can play the whole game without picking up any gadgets. So like, you don't need the thermal goggles. You don't need the Nikita rockets. You don't need like the I think there's a few you have to get, like the sniper rifle, I think you have to get, but you don't need like the mind detector. You can get through the whole game without that. You don't need to get it. You're not locked by something like, oh, I can't go any further without the mind detector. You know, you can learn the mind route and just die every time.
Did you know you can pick up those mines?
I did. Not at first, but I learned it.
I learned the hard way.
Yeah, yeah. So it was my first time playing it since childhood. But when I played it as childhood, right, I never owned the game. I know you did, but I never owned the game. So I played it in a friend's house of mine, and my friend's dad was super into games, so he had Metal Gear Solid, and we would play it there. And I remember it was really, really difficult. So it wasn't easy for me to play. I was like constantly dying. I think mostly it was just panic. The guards would see me and I would be running away and the alarm was going. I'm like, oh, I don't want to play anymore. Just like throwing the controller back to my friend, fix it. And it'd be like, it'd be all silent. I'd be like, yeah, I'll take over there again. But I think I told you this before, but we were so obsessed with that game, right? We used to like make these absolute cat like home movies. Right?
Yes,
I don't. I mentioned this, but I think it was off the podcast. And yeah, we would dress up as like Snake with the bandana and stuff, and we had like a video camera. And we had this one stupid scene where he had like a family computer.
Yeah.
And the idea was basically he would be at the family computer, and then I would come in as Snake, and I would like shoot him with this pretend gun with like a big orange piece on the top, and I would shoot him. And then he would press like play on the sound he had, which was like an alarm going off in the computer, you know? And we were like, this is going to look so cool because like I'm going to come in and shoot you. And then it'll be like the alarm's going off because I shot you. And it's kind of looked like we're in Metal Gear Solid. And I literally came in and I like shot him. And then there was like a 4 second delay where he tried to find the play button and then it just falls over. And we were watching it back and it looked so terrible. And we were like, that looks amazing. Absolutely cat. But that's a memory that like completely stuck with me through the years.
Just the fact that you're dressing up in costume as well.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And it was basically just we were wearing tracksuits and I had a tie, like a school tie around my head as a bandana, you know, which was just cat. But tell me, you start the game. And it's a bit kind of unclear what you have to do. So you're running around and you get used to the mechanics where like the puddles make a certain sound that alert the guards and they're like, what was that? And yeah. Then all of a sudden you have to like wait until the elevator comes down and you're like, how long do I wait? Do I keep running around? Do I stay here? And this is the first place I think where you can find the gun, the Sokum. I believe you can get it in this area. If you go to like the back, the south of the area and then climb under a pipe that it doesn't look like you can go under. I think you can get the Sokum there. I think. I could be absolutely full of shit, but I think you can get it there.
Garrett with the facts without them being facts.
I'm just saying what I remember as a kid. That's all. But I think
you can get the Sokum in the back of one of the vans or one of the trucks.
Yes. Yes, you can do this. Yeah.
I think you get your first cardboard box there as well. Did you actually know an interesting thing about the cardboard box? They were actually only initially for developers were using the cardboard box to test the AI's vision range.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
To see how good you were at hiding. So it was basically a transportable obstacle that devs were using to gauge AI interaction.
So were they just like placing the boxes, putting you behind it and seeing how they react to you being behind the box kind of thing?
Or just in the box. So they were basically populating an element that they could hide behind, they basically treated this like a, you know, they'd be able to equip the box, move around different areas in the map to see, to test
how close they can get before they see you and stuff like this.
That kind of thing. And it actually became such a hit that they kept it in and it became quite a novelty. So it's in every single Metal Gear Solid game you can get different variants of the cardboard box.
I have in one game, I think it's Metal Gear Solid 4, it becomes like an oil drum you can use as well. Where you can walk around and say, you can even roll in it and stuff like this. But did you know another little fact about the cardboard boxes? Did you know that there's like cardboard box type A, type B, and type C?
Yeah, and basically,
so the whole thing is like if you're in a type A box and you're in area B, then they're like, this isn't supposed to be here, and they move it, you know? Did you know that if you equip type A, type B, and type C and get in the back of a truck, you can fast travel to different parts of the map?
I knew that, yeah.
Based on where you're, because they're like, oh, this is going to part B or this is going to part C, which is really cool. This is your first like tutorial where you're talking on the codec to people. You can call them anytime, which I don't think I realized at the start of this tutorial that you can ring them for stuff anytime. And you run around this area and it's got a bit of guards, a bit of security, a bit of like sneaking into hidden spots. And then at this part, it's a bit unclear where you should be going because it's not clear that you can go up and interact with the elevator to go to the next floor, for me at least. So I was doing a bit of running back and forth here.
I think for a while, because I know if you eliminate all three guards down there, then the elevator comes down automatically.
Okay, because you can go up and just press the button.
Can you?
Yeah.
Obviously you can if you just played it. But as far as I know, if you take all three guards out, the elevator, I think the codec goes off and then the elevator's on the way down and then you have to hide And then that one extra guy comes out, and if you take him out, I think actually I remember when I first played it, I think when the elevator came down, I didn't know how to interact with it, and I'm kind of inside and I kind of go, where?
That's what I mean. There's a lot of things. It doesn't just like glow all of a sudden and point an arrow at it and say, come here and press X to interact, you know? It's like you go up to the object and you have no prompt. Like I explained this to you in Metro 2023. I said that when you play it on the top difficulty, it doesn't tell you that it doesn't have a prompt for when you can interact with the switch. And you were like, that's bizarre. How does that work? How would you know what to interact with? Metal Gear Solid is the exact same on any difficulty. It never highlights a thing that you can interact with.
Or there's no like objective on the radar. Like, you know,
nothing. You just have to go and try and say, can I press the switch here? Which is mad.
But I kind of, and I like, but it is bad. It's, do you say bad or mad? Mad.
Mad, mad. I like it. Yeah. I think it's good.
I like it too, because I think, you know.
Just,
I think
just that become, we're on the same page just before you come out with an opinion.
It's like, it's bad. Yes, I agree. Or it's mad. I agree.
Wait, did you say the other one? Good. Yeah, me too.
No, I agree, because I think like, I think we're just so used to games kind of pointing the way. And yeah, I think it takes a lot of your kind of mental strain away.
There's
it's
one
nice
game,
when you get to figure things out.
I can't remember what it is, but there's one game where you have some sort of a companion or something like this. And basically, if you take longer than like 15 seconds, the companion is like, why not try over here by the door? And it's like, could you shut the fuck up for 5 minutes and leave me try and play the game? You know, I'm looking at the scenery and stuff. And it's like, oh, you appear to be stuck. Why don't we try this boulder here? It's like, why don't you shut the fuck up, huh?
There's actually one thing that's really, and it's only because just you said that there. Do you know the new Kingdom Come Deliverance 2?
Mm-hmm, sure.
So you have a dog named Mutt in it. That fucker won't stop barking. He obviously barks to kind of, like, and it's not like, it's just a woof. It's woof, yeah, yeah. Woof, 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 constantly, like endlessly until you interact with him. And it happens 30 seconds later. It happens. I actually have to dismiss him. I can't have him near me. It's like,
but
why?
What's
dogs.
He barking for?
I don't like you. I'm not sure. One, because he's a dog.
Yeah, I know. But is it like, I'm not stupid, Jamie. I know my dogs bark. Okay. No, but like, is it part of a tutorial or that he's trying to lead you somewhere or is he just being annoying?
I think he kind of gives you an indicator that like enemies are in the area. It's like, I know I'm attacking this for a reason.
Enemies are in the area. Let me bark wildly for 10 minutes.
I think it kind of indicates if there's something kind of useful nearby, but
okay.
Either are, it's not a case that you can mute him or I think you can kind of put him on kind of a, not so much a mute mode. It's kind of like a, you tell him to heal and I think he stops, but I'm not sure for how long. But
like a
just,
snooze button for
so,
the dog, basically.
Yeah, it became so infuriating. I just don't use him. After like one, like the whole intro to the game as well is you trying to find him. Like there's a mad long quest.
Yeah, yeah.
Which actually led to one of the most frustrating quests because I actually thought, I know this is like a slight side tangent, but it pissed me off so much that I think I actually rage quit the game, which I haven't done in a while. But you're in one mission where you're drunk and you're kind of going up through woods, like forest.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And you're still, it's indicating, as you're walking up, there's a dog that you hallucinate talking to you and you interact with him and he basically tells you're on the right path or something to that effect. So you end up going down to where you start to see kind of corpses of animals that have been torn into by dogs. And then you stumble onto like a wolf's den. And all the wolves are static and they're not interacting. They're like frozen in place. And this isn't part of the mission. They should be moving. It's just that you're actually already on one quest, which ate into another, which shouldn't have. Which was weird.
So like it's a bug essentially.
Yeah. So I couldn't progress the quest because I was stuck in this and it took me so long to figure it out. Like it's just like stumbling drunk and you were drunk going through this forest. So all your vision's distorted. You're literally like the whole map is swimming around you. Yeah. Oh, the quest went on for way too long. But yeah, side tangent. Just because it indicates where you exactly need to go doesn't necessarily mean it was right. So sometimes it's better not to have any information.
Sure. I get you. But I do miss the figure it out yourself. But again, we have games now that are so expansive. It's like an open world. Like in Ocarina of Time, it suffered a little bit from this, where it's like Ocarina of Time map is so big and it doesn't tell you where to go. So it's like, where do you even start, you know? Do you spend like 20 minutes running across the map to look in this town to realize you're in the wrong town and then go like 20 minutes back the other way to go look in another town, then 20 minutes back the other way. And in modern day, I get that not everyone has the time for that. But when you're talking about a game that's so linear like Metal Gear Solid or Jedi Survivor, you don't really need tutorials that often, you know, because it's a pretty linear map. And sometimes you're around one room where you're lost for a little bit.
And I think this day and age, I think like most games seem to follow the same kind of format, especially on console. Like 90% of the games, B is crouch, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Click, 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 click left analog is to sprint or whatever.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know, X is to reload. A to jump. You know,
Y to change maybe weapon. Menu.
Or to change weapon or go through an inventory.
Depending on
the
game.
They're so... I hate kind of where you're really... And then you're forced to do like an intro, like a tutorial intro to learning controls. But yeah, I think, look, maybe we're just playing games too long.
Yeah, it could be. You have to remember as well, if someone comes in new and they've never played that kind of game, then...
Shut up, no, Garrett. I guess. Agree with me.
All right, I agree with you.
Yeah, good. So back to Metal Gear Solid.
So we're through the first area. We're now approaching our first boss fight, right? And for me, what's interesting about the boss fights in Metal Gear Solid is that they're all very grounded, I would say, most of the time, until you get to the end and some are a bit extreme. But like you're fighting a Revolver Ocelot, and that's quite a grounded fight. You're just running around a tiny room and you're just shooting at each other. But it feels so epic because of the... It's really difficult, but it feels so epic because of like the stakes, you know? Because you have the guy tied up in the what's his name?
Baker, yeah.
The guy, Baker, tied up in the middle of the room, and he's got all the trap wires for the C4. And at some point, you have to grab ammo, which is right next to the trip wires. And like you could accidentally just hit the tripwire and then everything explodes. You can't use grenades there. You can't use C4 because they set off the other C4. And it's quite like a steep learning curve for the first battle, I think.
Yeah, like I remember like I was looking up, I think when I came back playing that game, obviously like you try and run around and you just can't seem to catch him to fire off his shot. And then you circle back the other way and then he gets an alert symbol and he goes counterclockwise or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's actually a rhythm you can do. There's a part on one of the pillars if you start running from, you'll always line up with him. So you can literally kill him in six shots.
There's a way to cheese it, like, yeah. Which was difficult to figure out at the time because your health is going down fast in these fights, you know?
Yeah.
If you're messing around trying to figure stuff out.
His shots ricochet, if I remember right.
Yeah. And also, like, you had the little C4 puzzle just before you get to him. And if you save, it doesn't save on the spot, right? So you call your codec mailing to save. And she doesn't save on the spot. She saves you at the last checkpoint you're at. And the last checkpoint is like before the C4 puzzle. So, you know, you have like where they block up the walls and you have to blow through the walls to get to Ocelot, where they're hiding Baker. And you have to do that puzzle every time. And it's kind of like, well, I can do this part. Just put me right back into the boss fight again. You know, this part is easy. It's just it's a puzzle tedious. That I've solved, you know, it's tedious. Yeah. And it's like every time you die, you're like, I have to go through and do the puzzle again. But then we have our first look at the famous stealth camouflage. So when you beat Ocelot, there's a second stage where he's about to reload and shoot you again. And then the ninja turns up, the gray fox, and he cuts off his hand. And this is your first look at the famous gray fox, who's like kind of talking like he's from the future and like he's from the past. And it's a bit all over the place, very cryptic, which I like. I love the time travel aspect. And then we also get like the first mention of the PAL key system, which at the moment you have no real idea what it is. Now, I did talk to you about this and I did know the temperature thing was coming, but it's still kind of cool to see, you know, it's still kind of cool to see.
And totally and different when you kind of play it, you know, when you're
It is different when you're playing it, yeah, because there's a lot of puzzles around doing the PAL keys, which aren't very apparent as well, which we'll get to. And then you have the first like fourth wall break, which is where... Again, it's like the codec is your like support team. And this is the first time where it really feels like they're your support team because they're telling you to check the back of the case for Meryl's code. And you literally have to look at the back of the case and there's a screenshot on the case of you talking to Meryl and her code is there. And it's like that's how you get the code to ring. And that's just brilliant. It reminds me of this game, Star Tropics, I think it's called.
All right.
And in this game, you had to, it's on like the NES or the SNES, and I'm not big into the old Nintendo, so bear with me. But basically, it tells you that you have to put this like letter that you got from your father or something into water to reveal like a code. And it's literally like a piece that's in the manual, and you have to dip it in water to reveal a code on it. And that's you can really imagine cool. Back in the day, like you'd be very skeptical about putting this thing in water, you know? And you also had that when, like, you rented the game, then you couldn't get past this part because you didn't have this code downloaded.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, imagine going into, like,
because you had no, you had no internet. Yeah, because you had no internet to Google this and say, like, oh, what's the code in Star Tropics for doing this? Or, like, let's watch a walkthrough. You know, it didn't exist, so you just didn't play it, basically. But that was mad. That was, like, a real dodgy fourth wall break. I don't think they'd be allowed to do that today for some reason. So, yeah, that's kind of the first one. Then we move on to, we play a little bit more through the level, and then we have Psycho Mantis. Our first, like, interaction with Psycho Mantis. It's in the next corridor, actually. He kills everyone in the corridor, and then, or the ninja kills everyone in the corridor.
No, the ninja killed everyone.
The ninja kills everyone in the corridor, And then it's a very complex story in Metal Gear Solid, isn't it? You think it's quite simple, like that Snake, you know, shows up, infiltrates his base, but it, to remember everything that's happening in tandem with all these characters is actually quite a lot going on.
Yeah. Do you know when you get into that corridor before you meet Grey Fox, where you see all the bodies?
Yes.
Yeah, and you remember, like, you come around the corner and then one body's up and,
you know, one body is hanging. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. There's, do you know the intro, like the sound when you enter that room?
No.
So there's kind of like an intro, kind of like this kind of, it sounds like voices, like, you know, going off. They're kind of very, you can't comprehend them. But apparently, whether it's true or not, apparently these are actually,
my God,
apparently these are names of Tokyo metro stations or train stations.
Really?
And they're all mashed together and synthesized. And it makes this kind of like, I don't know, kind of voicey, not voicey, but, you know, like voices going up.
That's weird, because I remember this rumor as a kid that it was the voices of the developers who died working on the game, which
that's
was like
creepy.
The rumor. Yeah, that's really weird. And I was like, what do you mean died working on the game? Like the game was cursed and people started dying working on it, which was kind of weird.
All right, so who's in Mantis is your next boss?
Mantis is the next boss, I think. So you do a little bit with them sneaking around you get kind of the office areas now. So every area is kind of different and you get deeper into the base. And now you go to one floor. So you go back to this middle floor where you couldn't advance before. And then this is where you find Meryl. So you have to, like, this is so cool. Like, it doesn't tell you what you're doing. And basically there's a little bit early on where you find Meryl is in like a costume, you know, like one of the guards' costumes. And
that's later on. The first time you meet her, you're going, yeah. The first time you meet her, you're in a vent. You're looking for the DARPA chief.
Yeah.
And you're in the vent and you look down and you see her doing, she's doing some
tummy
crunches.
But is this, when does this happen? Is this before the fight with Ocelot or is this after the fight with Ocelot?
Before, I think.
Before the fight with Ocelot.
I think so. So basically you go in, you're looking for the DARPA chief. You look through the first vent and you see her working out. Then you find the DARPA chief and then you drop down. And when you drop down, you hear a fight kind of ensue. And the DARPA chief now is dead with maggots rolling out of him. Mm-hmm. And wait, is he dead?
No, I'm gonna look. This is how it works, right? We get into the elevator at the very start. And then more or less right after that, we find the DARPA chief. And right after that, the DARPA chief, we're in his cell. And then we're let out by
Meryl.
We're let out by Meryl. And then Meryl is in the costume of the guard.
Is it?
And we have, yeah, and we have this face off with the guards then. This is what happens. The DARPA chief dies. He has a heart attack. And then, and then she lets us out of the room, right? So this is what happens. So we've jumped this part. We skipped ahead, right? So she lets us out of the room. We come outside and then we have this standoff with her. And then the guards show up and basically the two of us together, Meryl and Snake, fight the guards.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yes.
And she's in the costume.
Because that's where you get the FAMAS.
Yes. And then she runs off and then Snake makes a comment. They're talking out the codec then. And then Snake makes a comment saying that the guards are going to spot you in that uniform. You walk like a woman, you know, or like with that body or something like this. And then, so we're right. We just missed this part earlier and then we're back on track. Then we have the fight with Ocelot. The ninja shows up. Baker dies. Then we go to the next floor and we're still talking with Meryl. And this is where I think he makes the comment that the guards are going to spot you in that costume in no time, you know. And then you run forward. And the next part is you have the tank fight with Raven.
Tank is first.
Yeah, the tank is first. So you fight the tank before you fight Mantis. Mantis is a bit later. So the tank
was frustrating.
The tank was very frustrating because you also have mines in this part in front of the tank. So the mines blow up. At this point, I didn't have the mine detector. Right, so I missed it at some point. So I was running through this part trying to figure out, like, I was dying each time and I was trying to figure out how you could run through this area. But again, this is another fight where it's like, it's quite simple, but it seems so like mammoth, you know? Because you're like, oh, I don't want to go near this massive tank and I'm out in the open and I'm exposed. And then you realize you just have to run at it basically with the shaft grenade blazing and throw grenades up into it was how I beat it. I think you had a different
That's how you do it. No, that's how you do it.
Did you beat it with the Nikita? But you don't have the Nikita at this point, do you?
No, you fight him twice.
Yes. I remember now. That's what you meant. I thought you meant the tank fight. Yeah.
Do you not fight him one? I thought he was first in
you fight
the
him
containers.
With the tank. You fight him with the tank and then you fight him in the containers after with the the minigun. Yeah. So you're on the right track. It's been a while since you played it, Jim.
Not a huge
even,
amount of time.
You know what? Even I had to like make notes, and even with the notes I'm getting confused. We fight the tank then. This was also quite like a challenging battle. And then we meet Ocelot for the first time, who's hiding in a cupboard or something. And Ocelot for me always reminded me of
Otacon.
We meet Otacon for the first time. God damn. We meet Otacon for the first time, right? And then Otacon for me always reminded me of Kojima as a kid. I don't know why. I think maybe because the circle glasses just looked like his style or something. I don't know. It just did. I don't know.
Did you know but, you can unlock Kojima?
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean unlock Kojima? That you can play as Kojima?
You can play as Kojima.
No.
That's a rumor.
Really? Do you want a bet?
I also heard that you can. I also heard that if you finish the game three times,
you get a tuxedo.
Yeah, and
that's true.
And Meryl is wearing your sneak suit.
Yeah, that's true. Apparently, one of the training missions, there's once you complete all of them or you complete a certain portion of them, there's one called Haido.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to play as Kojima, but it's his model.
Really?
For that mission. Yeah. It's cool, though.
Weird. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You meet Kojima or Otacon.
Otacon.
And basically, you then have the first fight with the ninja. So that's what's next.
I remember struggling so hard with that.
That was really tough because your reaction is, I'm going to use all my guns because he's only got a sword, so I'm just going to shoot him all the time, which makes the fight way worse then. And what you have to do in this part is you have to punch him. And when you punch him, he then says, oh, we're going to fight like warriors, and he goes hand to hand as well. And then it makes the fight easier in a way, which is mad. But then during this fight, if you look on one of the desks, I don't know if you know this, but on one of the desks is a CRT TV with a PS1 plugged into it. Did you know that?
No, that's really cool.
Yeah. I'm sitting on the desk. You can look it up. You just go to one of the desks. You can see it from the sky, but if you go to like Snake's View, you can see it even clearer. It's got the controllers without the analogs. It's really cool. And also, if you look on the wall, there is Police Knots, which was Kojima's game before Metal Gear Solid. There's a poster for Police Knots, and there's a poster for some Japanese mech TV show or something, which was an inspiration for Metal Rex.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's really cool.
Just pretty cool.
I love when they add those. Do you know, that's pride in your work.
So at this point, I can't remember how much you've heard about Metal Rex at this point, but you know that there is this thing called Metal Rex, which is like the secret weapon. Do you know that it's a nuclear weapon yet?
Does
the DARPA chief tell you that? Because Baker also gives you like a talk through of Metal Rex, and I think there is where you first hear about Metal Rex. Because I think the DARPA chief isn't too clear on what they're working on. Baker knows exactly what it is.
Right, yeah. Go for it.
And he says that it's like this nuclear weapon. And in my head, I was always thinking, massive spoilers ahead, obviously. I don't think you'd be listening to this episode if you plan on playing it. But in my head, I was like, Metal Rex is explained as like this huge mech that can walk anywhere in the world. And then he can fire nuclear weapons. And I was thinking, but can't you just fire a nuclear weapon from anywhere in the world? And then I was thinking, okay, but maybe like because you have, you know, defenses for nuclear bombs incoming, maybe it makes more sense to be a bit closer. And then I was thinking, this doesn't make sense. But this is then explained later by it uses a rail gun. So the nuclear warhead has no propulsion system. So then it's counted as a projectile and it gets around these like UN laws on armaments of nuclear weapons and stuff, which is really cool. And it can't be detected because it's no propulsion system. So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool and makes sense to have this thing to transport it closer to the country and stuff. That's pretty cool. So yeah, then after this, we are into the fight with we have like a standoff with Meryl. So we find Meryl after the fight with the ninja. So this is where it comes back to that you have to look for the guard who's walking like a woman. Do you remember this?
Which was, yeah, and you have to look at their hips.
And you basically, yeah, you have to look at the way they're like swaying their hips. And then you basically just have to run up to her and she reacts like a guard as if she's seen you. And then she runs away from you and she like hides in a bathroom. And then you have this standoff and you have this big long cinematic again. And then after this, you go directly to fight Mantis. Yeah. And this is probably like one of the most famous boss fights in video game history, I would say.
Something like that's never been replicated again.
Yeah. And what's really weird for me with this is you're fighting, first you kind of have to fight Meryl and you have to knock her out, which I think you're supposed to punch her, but I just threw a stun grenade at her and she just goes knocked out straight away. And then you have to fight Mantis and it's very difficult and it's very hard. But what's weird is the screen goes black and this, do you remember this? The screen pops up and it just says Hideo in the corner.
All right.
And it happens like three times. It's just like this black screen with Hideo in green writing in the top corner, like a VCR type screen.
Yes, it's like losing source.
Yes. And what was that about? Because I heard there was some secret you could do when the screen pops up. Like if you shoot your weapon when the screen pops up, you unlock Kojima for the playthrough and stuff like this.
All right. No, I don't know.
There was a lot of rumors around this because really weird because it's like completely fourth wall breaking. It has nothing to do with the game, essentially. And then you just continue on.
Let's actually really look and delve into that now and see if there's actually anything.
Yeah, I want to look into that.
How did you beat Mantis?
How did I beat Mantis? So I played it on an emulator, but I did the controller swap for it. So I had two controllers plugged into the emulator, two Xbox controllers, and one was controller 2, one was controller 1. Because I knew this was coming. I remember this from a kid that you swap the controller port. So I had set it up as 2 and hoped that it would work, and it worked flawlessly. So I was able to pick up the second controller and then fight him with the second controller, essentially. So that he can't read your mind then.
Yeah, when I'm playing it on my emulator, it in the options, it just says controller port 1, port 2. So you could actually toggle between them.
Ah, so you can just toggle between them. Cool. So you could do it the same way on the emulator then.
Yeah. But you can just toggle it to port 2 and it flawless.
But there is a second way that I heard you can beat him, which is like you shoot the mirrors or you shoot the faces off the statues or something like this. And I tried this, but I couldn't get it to work. And it's supposed to be like a backup way in case you, for some reason, can't switch controllers.
Did you lie down at any point?
Yeah. Because when you lie down, all the objects just fly over you then instead.
Yeah.
I think there's only...
Tommy crawl into the middle. Yeah, yeah. Just...
I think there's only one, and that's when the paintings fly, and I think they can hit you on the ground. Because they do like a somersault flying thing. I think they can get you. Everything else can't. But yeah, very interesting boss fight. Very scary because he has like 3 times the life that you have. And this is like the second boss. And this is like, the bosses are getting weird now at this stage. So you've just had like a revolver fight, which is pretty much just a shoot off. And now you're straight into this guy who's levitating objects in the room and like flying around the room.
But just the music and the atmosphere, like his vocal dialogue is brilliant. Yeah, like just very.
And then he also disappears and goes invisible. So there's a couple of ways you can beat him, actually. You can do the controller swap, right? You can shoot the statues, I think, and then he has this freak out where he loses concentration because you're shooting like his face is supposed to be disfigured. That's why he wears the mask or something.
Yeah.
And then when you shoot like the sculpture, they were sculptures of him and then you're destroying his face again or something and it makes him lose it. That's what I heard. Don't give out to me if I'm wrong because I don't really know.
I'll have to try this one now.
Yeah. And I did try it and I couldn't get any kind of reaction, but I don't know. Was I doing something wrong? I don't know. Is it you shoot the mirror or something like this? I can't remember. And then there's a third way, which is when he goes invisible, if you put on your thermal goggles, you can see him. But I didn't have the thermal goggles at this point, which is interesting because you can get stuff at all different points of the game. So like I got the mind detector much later. I got the thermal goggles much later, but you can get them somewhere earlier as well, which is cool. And then you can cheese the bosses.
You've
essentially
done a gadgetless run.
Yeah, pretty much. But I think these are kind of hidden at the start so that if you get them, it makes things much easier. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it would. The only thing I actually... All right, so next boss, because I suppose I'll chat about that one when we get to it.
All right. So then you kind of go out of the room. You have this long cutscene, same as you do with every boss, which is quite entertaining. Then you run through this kind of weird Tomb Raider-like area, which is like the wolves in the caves in the snowy mountains.
That freaked me out as a child.
That was terrifying, yeah. And then there's... Apparently, there was like a couple of things where... I don't know, this is like half a story. You could somehow get the wolves to like leave you alone. or be loyal to you or something like this if you throw something at them or something like, I can't remember. And apparently if you kick the baby wolf, there's a baby wolf at the end, and if you kick the baby wolf, he comes and pees on you a few minutes later. It was a rumor that I heard. I don't know how true it is, but we'll leave it open. Let us know in the comments if you ever did any of these kind of rumors.
If you kicked a puppy.
Yeah, yeah. Then the next fight is the sniper wolf fight. So Meryl gets shot by sniper wolf, and it's a big long corridor. And the second you go out, you get shot by the sniper straight away. So you're stuck in this little alcove, and all you can do is run away, basically. So you run back through the door.
Aiming.
That was difficult.
I used to go off to one side where she wasn't in my view, so I could aim down sights. Now, I don't mean, like, obviously I use diazepam to slow your heart rate. That's all fine. But just when you're actually moving, I could never get it. Like, it wasn't fluid. I kept jumping too high or jumping too left.
So what I found is with the analog, I could do it. And with the directional pad, which is quite likely you played Metal Gear Solid with no analog. You just had the directional pad.
Yeah.
And with the directional pad, it does it in jumps. So it like jumps and jumps and jumps, and it doesn't do it like smoothly. But with the analog, for some reason, it works just fine. I don't know. I don't really get it. But for me, this was the first like backtracking part. So this is the first one where you got to run back through to get the sniper rifle. Where do you get it again?
It's in, do you know, where you blew up the walls to get to Ocelot.
Yes.
So you have those, there's like, is it 9 rooms with card access?
Ah, and yes. And now you have the next level card and you can go back in. That took me a while to figure out, actually.
You get the PSG one there and you get the Nikita rockets.
Yes. So you want, that's a cool idea, actually, to have this like chamber where the card unlocks different rooms at different points and you can run back there. Because it happens at this point where you don't really remember it. And then like the second time you do it, you're like, oh yeah, I need this weapon. It's probably back there in those rooms again, which is kind of cool. For this part, I did put the emulator on fast forward because I was running through the whole map and I was like, I don't have the time for this. So I did play it on like 1.5 speed for this part. Yeah, so then you come back, you fight Sniper Wolf, and then this is where you get caught, right? And you get interrogated then by Sniper Wolf and by Ocelot, I think. Is it?
Not sure if Sniper Wolf is there. She's gone off licking her wounds.
Sniper Wolf is there, and then she leaves, I think, and then Ocelot takes over like the torture, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can choose to like restore your health and fight through the torture, or you can choose to give up, right?
Now, surrender, yeah.
You had already told me that you get the camo armor if you surrender, so I like instantly surrender, right? What happens if you don't give up?
You get a bandana and you get unlimited ammo.
And you get unlimited ammo then. Oh, okay.
But I thought stealth is so much more fun.
Yeah, I think so too. And it doesn't affect the story other than that, does it?
No, everything's the same. It just means you can just run past all the enemies, basically, and cameras.
And yeah, I took the stealth, but obviously you don't get it until your next playthrough because otherwise it would just be too easy, basically. So yeah, then we go into the cell, and then there's a couple of ways to get freed inside the cell. So you can
one way.
I think you can. There's one where you have something that looks like blood, or like you had like tomato sauce.
You get a bottle of ketchup.
Of ketchup. So what you can do is you can lie down and you can equip the bottle of ketchup and use it. And then it looks like you're bleeding out. And then the guard will run in and he will you're bleeding out and run in. Did you? How? Just squirt the ketchup on the floor and stand there.
Well, I've probably done that too. No, but I put the ketchup down. I lay down over it and he was like, he came over to inspect, but I already had gotten up before he opened the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to reload it.
I think there's another one where when he goes away, you can hide under the bed and then he can't see you and he comes in to see where you're gone. This is another one. And the last one then is that you just wait a while and then the ninja comes and opens the door, I think. Is it the ninja or is it Ocelot? Ocelot frees you because Ocelot has the camo. Otacon. Kojima. Otacon frees you because he has the camo suit. Right? And I can't remember, does he actually appear to you, or is this just implied that he's the one who frees you?
No, he comes along in camo, and he gives you ketchup.
He literally, does he? But does he not leave you out of the room?
No.
But how does he get out of the room?
He's not, he comes up to the hatch.
Ah, there's a hatch on the door, and he passes it through the hatch, and then he leaves. Yeah, he says, I have to get out of here, I feel much safer in the camo, and then runs away.
Just give us the camo.
Yeah, I know. Just give me the camo. I'll be more useful. You hide in the cupboard. Thanks. Let's solve all this. And then after this, do you have a second face-off at Sniper Wolf? Yeah. And this is where you kill her.
Yeah, she's in the forest.
Yes. And then you kill Sniper Wolf. But How did you fight Sniper Wolf this time?
Same thing. Like, there's...
You took out the sniper and you shot at her.
Yeah.
So at this point, I used the Nikita to kill her. So I hid behind a rock and I sent out the Nikita. And there's like a ramp. If you fire it straight at her, it explodes on the cliff. But you can go up the side where you would walk up basically with the Nikita. It goes up the top and you can just kill her with the Nikita. So I like cheese my first boss.
I think my workaround, well, not even a workaround, but I used to go up and I remember there's like a rock to your left that you can kind of go prone behind. Mm-hmm, and I just wait for her to run over until she comes into view.
Yeah, sure.
And then I slowly kind of step out a little so I get at least another point.
Another shot. So no, I cheese this boss. So I just ran in and just Nikita'd her three times or something and then she dies. Then you have the famous stairway chase. Do you remember this?
Where
you're running up and up and up steps. Did you know, right? The big problem with this was that you couldn't, you had to stop every time you shoot. So when you're running up, there's guards ahead of you and you have to stop to shoot them. And then the guard's chasing you, catch up with you, right? So you have to shoot the guard behind you and then you're constantly
using stuns and claymores?
No, I did use claymores actually, but what I learned later, right? So I put down loads of claymores and then just kept running and then using stuns to get past them. And then it was kind of cheesing it. So this is what I love, that there's so many ways to play it, you know? You just have to get through it. It doesn't matter how you do it, right? And you can, if you press square to fire, right? So you hold square to fire and then you let go to actually fire. If you press square and at the same time press crouch, you can run and shoot. Did you know that?
Yeah,
so you can run up.
I remember that,
You can run and gun the whole way up the stairs without any claymores or anything.
There's another way. If I recall, that door is locked on the top. You need to get your...
You need to get to the outside and you need to put C4 on the door to blow it open. Isn't that right? Because I think they tell you on the codec that you try to open it and they tell you on the codec that the door gets frozen over and they usually blow it open with C4. I think in this area, I think.
If I remember correctly, I glitched it. And how you do it is you equip stuns and just before you hit the landing, so there's a pillar and then there's the landing on the flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And you throw a stun just as you're hitting that pillar. And by the time you're up the next level where the soldiers are coming down, they're on the floor. And you do that all the way up to the top and then you quickly put your back to the wall. And because the door, in most games, there's kind of priority for the player. So that if something if you're to kind of come against an obstacle, if you're not able to, if the obstacle that you're against or object isn't able to move or it's hindering you in a way, after a few seconds, it phases through you. So basically what happens is that when you get up and if you time it correctly, I think you can put your back to the door. I can't remember how, but you get up to the top. I'm just trying to remember it now. So remember, you get up to the top, you have to put your back by the door and just off to the edge of the door and the wall. And then you look at a pillar on the corner. It's whatever way you do it anyway, it positions you correctly. And then I think
it's kind of like that you enter the camera mode and then your body is like glitched into the wall kind of. And then you're phased through it. Essentially, like in Mario, in the old Mario games where you could clip a wall and then it would push you through the wall kind of.
That's exactly it. It's a wall that pushes you through the wall.
And it tries to eject you out of the wall to end the collision that's happening kind of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, cool. Yeah, so this took me probably the longest in the game, I think, this running up the stairs. Because this is
That was painful.
Then you get to the top and you meet Otacon again. And this is where I got stuck, right? Because the first thing I did was run past the elevator because the elevator was broken. And then the stairway is blocked by a bunch of boxes, right? So you can't run up. And then you meet Otacon and he says he's going to try and fix the elevator. You go ahead without him, blah, blah, blah. And then I literally started backtracking through the whole map because I was like, well, the stairway is blocked with boxes, not knowing that after this scene with Otacon, the boxes are moved magically and you can run up the stairs then. So I went through like the whole map looking for what to do. And at this point, I had to look up a walkthrough then to see, the boxes are moved in the corner. I can just run up the stairs now, which is slightly infuriating. Then you have to fight. So you had kind of a run-in already with the chopper, with the Hindi. And now you're going back to finish the job and fight the Hindi. So you're up on... Did you already do the rappel off the building with the Hindi shooting at you? I think you did, right?
That's when you come down, yeah.
That was like the Mission Impossible style scaling down the building.
Is it not just called a hind?
No, it's a hind D, no? Hind E, no? Because it's hind space capital E. No?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a hind E. Maybe it's a hind. I think you could be right, Jamie.
I would have always called it a hind.
Why did I think it was a hind E?
Why do you think Ocelot's Adagot? We won't go there.
I don't know. I'm not the person who should be doing this podcast,
I'm going to call that now. I'm going to call it Garrett's vocabulary.
So, yeah.
We'll
call someone for the next episode who knows what they're talking about. Yeah, so this boss was, kind of a bit tedious for me. This was the first boss where I felt it was a bit drawn out. Because it's like, hide from him, wait for him to go through this massive routine, then shoot the stinger at him, then you got to wait like another 20 minutes again. It wasn't that difficult, and it was a bit kind of, I'm kind of done with this now. Like 3 shots with him would have done not like 20, you know? Because he was losing like a tiny bit of health each time. Then next we have one of my favorite scenes, which is when you get on the elevator, right? This big platform elevator, and you're going down into the basement or something like this. And so you're going down from where you fight the helicopter. And then Otacon says that he went back to get you a camel suit from his lab and that the 4 other camel suits are missing. And then he's like, what's weird was that the weight limit for the elevator pinged when I was on it. And then he's like, but the weight limit is like 400 pounds and you only weigh 120. And then it's all of a sudden like, Snake, the camel suits are there with you. And then like, it like goes back to this fight and you see the 4 camel suits standing around you. Now, I think you're supposed to have the thermal goggles at this point and you put on the thermal goggles and you can fight them. But I could see them perfectly without the thermal goggles. I didn't really need them. And so I fought them without the thermal goggles, but I used grenades here because this is quite tough.
I think I choose claymores.
Yeah, they surround you and they're like in all 4 corners, basically. So if you shoot at one, the others shoot you. And I think I went to one side and threw grenades to the other, and then they kind of run a bit away from you to shoot at you, and then you kind of cheese it a little bit that way. So that was one of the cooler kind of mini boss fights, I guess. It wasn't really a boss fight, was it? But one of the mini ones.
Traction.
Yeah, and I was actually wrong. This is where you fight Sniper Wolf. So you were right. This comes later. We're all over the place with this, but anyway.
We're all over the place.
It's a confusing game anyway. I'm sure things are more clear after this walkthrough. And so yeah, then you fight Sniper Wolf, which we talked about already. Then you go to the first hot area, which becomes very key later with the Palkis. So this is when you're in like this.
I thought you were doing a little bit of a pun there. It becomes key later.
Yeah, let's call it a pun. Yeah, this becomes a key moment later because you got to come back with the power key to heat it up to unlock the region, basically. And then you fight, and then you go down this huge elevator. This is just before the second Raven fight, right? And I was just about to say one thing I don't get, and now I just made the connection in my head and I feel stupid because I was going to say, I don't get why there's a bunch of birds flying around when you're going down on the elevator. And now I'm just like, yeah, you're just about to fight Raven, obviously, and there's ravens flying around. So yeah, forget I was going to say anything. It's embarrassing. I feel a bit stupid now after that.
Why is there so many crew?
And I was like, what? I was literally playing this and I was like, what do the birds mean? Yeah, then you go downstairs and you fight Raven. And this is, you use the Nikitas for this, yeah?
Yeah, that's where I used
it. I did the same. I felt a bit like I was cheating, but then it got really difficult towards the end and I felt like I wasn't cheating.
Yeah.
So like the first few shots were easy and then it was like really hard to get to him before he got to you kind of.
Yeah. No, that's where I, I think that's the only way to beat him really with there.
Yeah.
Because I remember like the sheer panic, like, because I think when you hit him, I think he charges you a little bit or he moves quicker.
Okay. So he gets... Does it get quicker and quicker the more you hit him?
No, I just think like if you were to run up to him to get off a round, I think not only you're obviously in his line of sight where he'll just mow you down, but I think he seeks you out quicker. I think he moves faster to get to your last location.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So you have to like shoot him and then you have to run really fast to get away from where you were basically.
Yeah,
I get you. And then the next part we move into is basically there's a lot of calls happen here and there's a lot of like, you know, it's all up in the air. Like the general is working against you. The master is telling you that Mei Ling can't be trusted or, you know, there's a lot of like deception going on and it's like, she's not who she says she is. We're off the line here. And you're kind of like, what the fuck is going on? I'm fully convinced that the general is the bad guy at this point. Fully convinced. And like, he's the evil villain of the whole thing. I was like, that's it. You know, it's too suspicious. And I was like, the master is telling me. And because he's kind of called master, it's like, you must have a lot of trust in this person. So obviously he's correct, you know. And then you get to Metal Rex. And this is where things get kind of weird, because Metal Rex has no like guards around or anything. And yeah, Metal Rex is just in this quiet area on its own. And like, you're like, okay. Up on the roof. And that's kind of it.
Balustrades, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have like a run-in with Liquid Snake here. And he was flying the Hind, right? The Hind?
Yeah.
The helicopter?
The Hind, yeah.
So he was flying the helicopter. He crashed, obviously survived. And then, then you see him again with Ocelot, who's back again. Who, surprisingly, at this point, I'm thinking, why is Ocelot always in the key parts of the whole thing? Where, like, he was just a mini boss at the start, and he's there for the torture, and he's there for the, you know, part with Liquid Snake. And yeah, I was getting a little suspicious of Ocelot at this point. I was like, what does he play in this whole thing? Because at this point, I'm just paranoid of everyone, right? Because everyone is telling me something different, and I'm like, trust no one. Everyone's out to get me. Something weird is going on with everyone, right? So you lose the key at this point, and you drop it, and then you have to do this weird thing where you're chasing the rat who steals your key. Do you remember this? And you got to shoot the rat with the Nikita launcher.
There's also a thing, I think I'm right in what I say, but I think, you know, if you're in vents and you see rats in a vent,
yes,
they
right,
guide
you're
you
right.
through the vents.
Yeah.
Isn't that? Yeah.
Because in early testing, people were saying that they were getting lost in the vents because they had like a left and right turn and they weren't really aware of where they should be. So Kojima put in these rats to kind of lead you the right way then.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool. Yeah, it's quite a subtle way. That's one of the few subtle hand-holding moments, I would say, that they get away with.
You kill the rat, get your key back.
Yeah, you kill the rat,
blow
get
the key
back.
To smithereens.
And at this point now, I have to say the gameplay is getting a little bit tedious because there's already been some backtracking, and now there's like this thing with the rat chasing the key just to go back up all the ladders again up to the top, you know? And it's becoming a little bit like, okay, was there a need for this rat chase? You know, could we just have gone straight to this part? Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're showing off the mechanics of the system. That's fine, right? Then you get back up and you go into you hear like the conversation with Ocelot and with Liquid Snake. Then they leave or something, and then you get into the room on your own and you have this thing with the Palkia. This is where the Palkia mystery starts.
Wasn't there something that goes down over the edge and it goes into the water down there?
That's the Palkia. And that's when the rat picks it up and you have to chase the rat around together. That's connected. Yeah. So you go down looking for it, you can't find it, and the master tells you one of the rats must have it.
Yeah, basically. So you get the key and you have to then put it into the three laptops.
Yes, so you have to first put it in once. This like starts the timer, then you have to run back to where you fought Raven because this is all icy. And you have to put it in the cold because the cold is the next one. And you have to do them in order as well. You can't go and get the hot first and come back for the cold.
Yeah.
Then the last one is to heat the Palkia up. So if anyone who's not familiar, it's one key for three laptops. And the whole time you're thinking that it's three different keys that you have to get. And then you figure out Ocelot digs through Baker's files it's Baker's files, I think, he hacks. And he gets the information that it's the same key and you heat it and it changes shapes. And this is how you activate it, basically. And Metal Rex at this point is already activated, but to deactivate it, you have to put in the PAL keys in the sequence again, and then this deactivates it, basically. So you run back, you do the two things. I also put it on fast forward for this, because this is basically just running through the map, right? And when I say fast forward, I'm still playing. It's just slightly faster gameplay, basically. This was a little bit tedious, but it was saved by the fact that it was the PAL key mystery, and it was quite fun and fresh, you know. I would have liked to have run a little bit less, but I had to fast forward, so it didn't make much difference anyway. And back in the day, you had the time for this kind of shit, playing this like as a team. And then we move on to like the Metal Rex / Solid / Liquid Snake fights, which for me,
no, because we were told we were supposed to be deactivating it.
I just skipped over like the key part. One of my favorite parts as well. We're told we're deactivated. Then we're told we activated it. We find out that Master is actually Liquid Snake in disguise the whole time.
Yeah.
And at this point, doesn't the commander get like kidnapped or something and taken off duty? And like the president comes on and says that he's in charge now or something like this.
I don't remember that.
I think Mei Ling gets taken off duty by the general or the commander. I can't remember. Right. And then the commander gets taken away by the president. He gets like relieved of duty, basically. And the commander is taken over the whole operation because the general has gone rogue, right? Because the general is trying to tell you that they tricked you into doing the key thing or something.
I'm just agreeing with you. Yeah. I don't remember and that bit.
I don't remember exactly, but look, you can look up, if you want the story, you've come to the wrong place, right? Then we move on to like the Metal Rex fights and stuff, which for me, they were okay. They were fine. I found them not as good as the other boss fights. I think the part with Ninja is pretty cool, when Ninja comes in and saves you halfway through.
That was cool. You thought like when you first kind of meet Rex, like just chaffs and rocket launcher. Like I think I done it the way you throw off a chaff and you get under him and you just look up and shoot the rocket up to him.
Okay, I just did that. You just stay close to him. You run away from him until he fires the rockets. Then you run at him and the rockets miss you each time. Yeah. And then when you're under him, the machine gun comes out. And then after the machine gun comes out, you just shoot the rocket at his rocket part, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was how I beat him. And then it's the same kind of process later. He just has also like this beam weapon as well.
And if I remember, you can actually shoot off a component or two, his sensors, I think.
You can actually, at this point, for the second half of the fight where the cockpit's open, you can take out the sniper rifle and you can shoot Liquid Snake directly. Did you know that? He'll react and everything, but it won't get the health of Rex down. But he'll react to being shot and like make a comment and stuff, which is pretty cool.
I probably wouldn't be able to aim that quickly the way I struggled.
I didn't do it. I just heard you can do this. And then you have the chase scene, which keeps things a little bit fresh. So you fight Liquid hand to hand. Then you either end up escaping with Meryl or with Otacon. I don't remember how you make this choice. I ended up with Otacon. Who did you end up with? Do you remember?
I think Otacon as well.
I don't know how you make the choice. I think
you have to do something. Yeah. I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I played and finished Metal Gear Solid 1 like a few years ago, only when I started replaying it until I got lost. I haven't picked it up again, but I assume I probably got the most basic finish. I didn't.
Yeah, could be.
I don't think I got Meryl.
I honestly, I don't remember. I don't know how you get Meryl or how you get Otacon. I got Otacon. Maybe it's something to do with whether you take whether you submit or whether you don't submit. I don't know. To the torture.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Anyway. Let us know in the comments if you know. But so then you have like this, you escape, then you kill Liquid Snake, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you talk
about the fact that you're both clones and so on. And you're both clones of Big Boss. And at this point, you don't know who Big Boss is, but I think he's in the Metal Gear games, the earlier ones. But at this point, we didn't know there was any earlier games. So it was just Metal Gear Solid and that was it. Big Boss. And I'm not getting into the whole Big Boss, Liquid Snake, Solid Snake, because there's so many clones and different factions and different narratives and motives that will be here all day. So Liquid Snake and Solid Snake are clones. That's all you need to know right now. Nothing else, right? It's Gray Fox has also explained who he is. This is also really complicated. I'm not going to get into that now because he's like from this old. Yeah, we're not getting into it. And then you have this kind of cinematic at the end where they're talking and you feel like you're outside in the sun on the snowmobile. And you kind of feel like you have this. You know, when you finish games as a kid and you had that moment of like, oh my God, it's over, you know, like all this stuff I've been through is finished. And it's like this weird feeling. And you really get that here, which is something I don't think you get in many games anymore. You know, that feeling of like,
it's a conclusion, you know?
Yeah. It's a proper conclusion where you're like, everything is now over. And you're like, think of all the stuff we did in the past, like hours of playing this game, you know, where we started, like coming in, swimming into Shadow Moses Island, and then you finish on this, and it's pretty cool. And then obviously it's revealed that like Master was the traitor, and then the general is back at the helm and stuff. And then post credits you have an interesting cutscene. Do you remember this?
No, go for it.
You have an interesting cutscene where you hear an audio. So if you listen to the credits the whole way through right to the end, which I think you have to, I don't think you can skip them, you hear someone talking, and this voice is Ocelot, and he's like, he says something like, you know, yeah, I've got the dad on Metal Gear, and no, they had no idea I was working for you, and like all this talk. And that's a phone call to the president, and he took over from the general at some point in the calls. And the president Johnson, I think it is the one who's like calling all the shots basically, and Ocelot is working for him. And then it's not really clear if you're like the good guy or you're a pawn for the bad guys or what exactly is happening. of the grand scheme of the story.
You're always a pawn.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously when you finish the game, you have New Game Plus, where you have like the ammo or you have the camouflage and camo, you can replay the whole game, which is pretty cool because you can properly explore with the camo because nobody can see you basically.
Did you try the camo?
I did. A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah. I love it.
It's cool also just to like, you know, you can really take your time and explore like every detail of the level because there's a lot of hidden areas, obviously, which is pretty cool. And then you have like, obviously, I started Metal Gear Solid 2 now off the heels of Metal Gear Solid 1. And you had the opening cutscene where he's running with the camel on the bridge and he jumps over the bridge onto the boat. And this whole game now is set on the boat, I think, where they're transporting Metal Rex. And it's like this massive ship, right? When you land so hard that it breaks the camel. So you're like starting the mission with the camel and you're like, oh my God, I got camel for this. And then he lands and the camel goes all glitchy. And then Otacon tells him that the fall must have broke the camo unit. And then he's like, I wasn't planning on relying on this anyway. And like, it's just so
like,
cool.
No.
Yeah. but yeah.
So that concludes Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah. So did you like it?
Oh man. Do you know what? It's just one of those games. I think like just even just to delve back in, just to hear like the evasion sounds or the alert sounds. But there was actually, was it you who said it to me before about like, they're to avoid players just sneaking through the entire game there, because there's a thing where like obviously you could probably do a stealth run where you can't get caught by anything or you don't pick up any soldiers.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But the thing is, they do checks like on comms, and if you do get flagged, like it's not a thing that you can clear soldiers on a map. Like
no.
It's not as if you can go in and take out everyone. So like if you try and stealth run it and you take out, you know, if there's 10 soldiers on a floor and you take out all 10 or you start taking them out one by one, they do a comms check and then they send in more troops to investigate the area. So it eliminates you being able to cheese your way through maps.
There's also apparently if you shoot out the cameras, because you can shoot the cameras in it, right? But if you shoot out the cameras, they change their patrol routines to now cover the part with the broken camera as well.
See, like, so, like this
the guard will adjust
like,
and then cover that part. And then that's even more difficult than avoiding the camera. So then you're like, I'll just leave the camera and sneak past it, which is pretty cool.
See, but that's the thing. That's what I loved about it. Like, and I said it because I know I kind of mentioned it in the last episode, which was now episode 9.
Yeah.
But it was just like, just those little details that they added in, like from a game that came out in 1998. And I reiterate just about the fact that you're in a cold area. You've developed a flu. Your whole dialogue has changed on the codec. You actually talk as if you're under the weather.
Yeah.
Or if you walking in snow and you see the footprints, the guards will follow your footprints to come find you. You know, it's these little kind of niche details. And again,
stepping on like a metal grate or stepping in a puddle, they hear it. Like the cigarettes unveiling the lasers for the grids and stuff. Really cool. Yeah, really cool. But anyway, Jamie, before we finish, we have some listener submissions, which...
yes, we do.
We basically asked
for
nostalgic... We basically asked for nostalgic stories of Metal Gear Solid 1 because we wanted to make this episode not just like about our nostalgia, but also like unlock those memories for everyone and kind of get a feeling for how everyone else's experience was. So I suppose, do you want to take the first one?
All right, this comes in from Cooley. Or Cully? Cooley? I presume Cooley.
We're going to get a lot of the names wrong, probably. We just have to accept
that. Yeah, by the
way.
Pick names that are easier. All right, so he said, I remember being a kid and booting up the demo from my jam-packed disc and being blown away at how real the game felt. And the more than that, he was terrified of this game. And terrified in capital letters.
Rightly so.
As soon as I alarmed the guards, I cowered behind a forklift in the top right of the corner and prayed for my life. I too done this, believe it or not. I think there's a ration pack behind there, actually, if I'm not mistaken. It was incredibly scary for me, and then the guard found me and killed me. I needed to take a break after that.
Man,
I think there is moments in games. I was the same. Panic mode.
Like, I would be panicking, the alarms are going off, I get seen, and then I'm like, you take over there to my friend and like get me safe again and then I'll take the controller back. So thank you, Cooley, for the submission. Second one is from Dodgy Boy Gomez. Obvious, but figuring out how to beat Psycho Mantis on your own without the internet or other sources has to be one of the most unique and satisfying experiences in any gamer's life. That always goes back to like, I don't think it's fully seen by this generation that like we played these games. And there's such complex mechanics in this game. There's barely any tutorial. And we had no one to, like, we couldn't look up a video walkthrough on YouTube. We couldn't ask anyone. Most likely your friends either didn't have the same game, or if they did, they were stuck on the same part. And like, you were going by rumors and hearsay most of the time, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Which is something we just don't have anymore.
It is, like, look, fair enough. I know you can look up like a playthrough and you might get some tips. And even though you do feel accomplished after you do it, I think nothing beats, you know, tackling something and doing it completely on your own merit. Like,
yeah, you know, absolutely.
Like, even like, just, I suppose, like when playing the likes of like Elden Ring now, and, you know, facing a boss that you never fought before and doing it from start to finish without any help, like, it is sense of satisfaction. I'm good. You got good. So thank you very much for Dodgy Boy Gomez for sending that in.
So the next one
is from Turk Snake. Turk_Snake goes, he said, I was playing Metal Gear Solid 1 again with a friend of mine recently, and he told me that he had a friend who looked like Otagon. Otagon, not Ocelot, Otagon. I forgot where the sniper rifle was during this part of the game, so I said to myself, I should ask Otagon where the gun is. My friend immediately called the person who looked like Otagon and asked where the gun was.
This is like highly related to like the actual codec in the game, you know, because you're, there's constantly these fourth wall breaks and it's like your support crew. That's very cool. Thank you for the submission.
Or is it just the fact that he didn't realize his friend looked like Otagon until they rang Otagon on the codec and he was like, oh my God, it's you. That's what I'm reading from it.
Yeah, could be. I don't know, maybe. Okay, so the next one is from Nisha, who has the lovely podcast Press Any Button to Continue, which you should also check out. Also known as Retro Gamer Ireland or Retro Modern Gamer Ireland these days. He says, I remember my friend said that you could unlock the Metal Gear Solid game from a demo disc if you completed it in a certain way. Absolutely nonsense, but it was a legendary tale back in the day. And this is also like, you couldn't check all these bullshit stories. And sometimes these bullshit stories were completely true. You know, like there's one that I know Nisha told the story before, that there was one that his friend told him as well, that he could basically have a Sega Mega Drive or Sega Master System, I think, and you could turn it on with no game and Alex the Kid would start up. And they were like, oh, this is complete bullshit. And lots of people were saying this. And then his friend invited him over one day to show him. And then he was like, sure, this is nonsense, you know, and like he'll like put the game in and then pull it out and the game will keep playing or something. And yeah, he called him over and sure enough, you turn it on with nothing in it. And the Sega Master Systems had like pre-programmed games. I think you could get Sonic as well or something.
Mad.
Just by turning it on with nothing in it. I never advertised it or anything, which is weird. So yeah. So next one.
So thank you, Nisha, for sending that in. So number 5. So we have King_Lizard, a.k.a. Mike. It was a PSX essential that there really was nothing else like it. Totally original on release and loved the isometric viewpoint. It was like playing a piece of art. It looked so good. The stealth and humor mix. Intriguing story and characters, plus cool boss fights were just gaming's next level. A major innovation for its era and one of those games or one of those standout titles that remains classic to this day. And it does, like we said, the game is like, it's dated, but it's dated in a very kind of, what would you even call it? Like it just rings true to what it was. Like it's an honest game, you know, it's a really good story, really good cinematics, top tier voice acting, good sound design. And it's a game that, even though I know with kind of the running back and forth, you know, it seldom happened, but and as tedious as it is, I think we were just more tolerable back then. I think now that we have games where you fast travel in, or I know you could say you could fast travel in Metal Gear Solid, so you can get into the cardboard boxes and you could travel from location to location. Most people wouldn't have known that. And it's not that it's something you didn't need to do too often either.
I think also you had very few games, you know, you didn't have like Game Pass like you have today where you had thousands. So you had one game and you were squeezing every bit of fun you could get out of that one game, you know.
Damn,
and
right.
Like this running around didn't bother us in the slightest because you didn't really want it to end, essentially, you know.
Probably nothing else to play.
True.
One or two games.
So thank you, King Lizard. King Lizard has a fantastic Instagram as well where he posts a bunch of his collection. You should check it out. But the next submission from King of Cards. I hope you receive many stories regarding Metal Gear Solid. I have many of them. I knew Metal Gear Solid when a cousin was playing it, and I was watching it on the part of Snake doing the rappel while the Hind D, was shooting at him. See, it is Hindi. Well, I think I said he said Hindi, Hindi, whatever. Yeah, was shooting at him. I couldn't believe my eyes that such action could be possible in a video game. I begged my cousin to lend me the game, but many times he said, it's a copy. Your PlayStation can't run the game. So at the time, I didn't understand this, that his PS1 had been modified, nor he bothered to explain it. Years prior, I found that some guy had the game original this time. He let me borrow it, and I lent him Final Fantasy VII. He didn't understand Metal Gear Solid because he said it was a game with a little soldier and he couldn't find a way to progress in it when you had to use C4 on the walls. This was incredibly difficult to figure out. Yeah, I know they do hint that like the walls were a different color, but even so, I was running around like wasting all my C4 blowing up shit that I thought looked a different color and it didn't, you know. And then you get to the one, like, yeah, you get to the one very obvious patch, then you're like, oh,
I have no more C4 left.
Yeah. And then you have to go kill yourself somehow. He continues, imagine my surprise when he was talking about Metal Gear Solid all along. I wanted to say this because for many years, I didn't have any friends to talk about Metal Gear until I met my friend Zidane. It was his nickname. He was the biggest fan of Metal Gear and Kojima. Sadly, he passed away a month ago, and in his funeral, we played The Best Is Yet to Come. Oh, that's lovely.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, that's a nice story.
And thank you for sending that in.
Yeah, thank you for the submission. Really cool. So the next one, over to you. I don't know how to pronounce this name. It's all on you.
That's why you gave it to me, isn't it? So I'd say it's Cactuar, Cactuar, LOL, LOL. I must have been around 12 or 13 when Metal Gear Solid came out. Everyone in school used to get the official PlayStation magazine. And when the demo disc came out, it was all we could talk about. Although I couldn't beat the demo for an embarrassing amount of time, my brain couldn't grasp the stealth aspect. But despite the constant failure, I was hooked and spent untold hours replaying the demo until it came out. My local game store hosted a midnight release, which everyone in the area, in brackets, because there was a lot of excitement for this game, close bracket, everyone in the area was planning to attend. I managed to convince my mom to go after begging for a week, only to find myself and one other guy were the only people that turned up. Oh no.
This is so like, I watched a video recently of like someone pre-ordering the Switch 2, and he went to the store like 4 hours early or something, and he was like, I don't know if anyone else is going to be there. And then he's like, I'm the only one here. And then like gets out of his car and goes to the door, and then like 10 people get out of their cars and walk to the door.
So he continues, he goes, he'd pre-ordered the game. He goes, it's his first time ever pre-ordering it. And it was also the special edition, which came with the game itself, the game soundtrack, and a Metal Gear Solid shirt and a Foxhound patch in a fancy box. It really was the top game of that year. And I think that there were only a few kids in school not playing it. He goes, with game mechanics, ways that we hadn't seen before, multiple ways to play, great sound design and directing that felt like you're playing through a movie as Bond himself. It was everything a teenage boy could want. And I wholeheartedly agree with that.
That's mad that there was a special edition. I didn't even know you had like special editions back then. I never got one for like the PS1 or even the PS2, I think. Maybe the PS2, I don't know. But it's mad that you had like a special edition on the PS1. I wonder, was it like a special edition or was it like a package thrown together by a shop?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe there was. I don't know. It'd be cool to see. Because I know especially in America and stuff, you have like shops that do particular releases, you know, only available at Target and stuff like this. And so
you have two versions of the game. So you have the Japanese Metal Gear Solid, which was released in 97, and then the EU version in 98. I wonder, is there actually any differences apart from language? Was there anything added in or removed from either game?
Yeah, it could be. There's also like, obviously there's the American version, but I know that the box art is always different for the American version. I think in this case, it was all white, the box for Metal Gear Solid in America. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, thank you for the submission. Capture love. The next one is from Eto. So he says, it was around 2012. GZ was announced. I'm not sure what GZ is, are you?
G's, just G's.
G's? G's was announced?
G's was announced.
Metal Gear Zero, no?
No.
What was announced in 2012? Wait, I gotta Google it, wait. I'm so sorry. Metal Gear 2012. What is GZ?
You mean, anyway, he might get back to us, Edo. Edo,
anyway,
what is GZ?
Anyway, Yeah, what does GZ stand for? GZ was announced because we don't read these in advance, so I can't ask these things because we leave them for the surprise of the readout. So it's as it is. So if we don't understand anything, apologies. I was 12 years old, already knew what MGS series was at the time, but never had the chance to play any of them. It was also the same time I learned about the emulators, and when I heard 5 was going to be released on PC also, thought this could be a good time to start somewhere.
Ground Zero.
Then you defend Phantom Pain. Yes, that's what it was. Okay, we got there in the end. It was a slow start.
We got there a little slow, though. Apologies.
Found the first two hard, so I skipped right on to MGS 1. So yeah, this was the original Metal Gears. So he skipped straight on to Metal Gear Solid 1. After a few hours of internet search and tutorial videos, I succeeded working it on my PC. And holy shit, this is the best game I have ever played, in capital letters. It took me a week to finish. I was the same. I got like hooked on this and I had played it before. It took me like 1 week to power through it with a full-time job. Only games that I had played until that was COD, Tomb Raider, etc., but never played something like this that was so refined. The card trick, hot and cold cards, still fascinates me to this day. Mantis's controller show, it was like dark magic, what the hell. I never felt so much sympathy for an entertainment material's characters. Vulcan Raven's warrior code, Sniper Wolf and Mantis's traumas and troubles past, Campbell and Meryl's relation, and so much more. For me, it's the third best game in the series. One, MGS4, and yeah, number one is MGS4, and number two is MGS3. So yeah, the third best game. I haven't played the others, so I really can't say, but it's good to know that like there's more good games coming. Have you played some of the rest?
I have the first three, and I have Ground Zero and Phantom Pain.
Yeah.
I didn't play, if I'm not mistaken, I think Metal Gear Solid 4 is where you're riding Raiden and you're essentially Grey Fox, you're a cyborg. I never played it. I actually heard that is supposed to be one of the best in the series.
Okay. So this is cool because I was thinking that like Metal Gear Solid 1 was like the best and I played a bit of 2. I haven't played any of 3, 4, 5, nothing. I think 5 I played a little bit, but just as like a demo or something, and I wasn't really into Metal Gear Solid at that point. So it's very cool to know that there's like much better games coming in some people's opinions. So it's not like a degrading franchise, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That's quite cool. I think like for me, obviously, I think for what it is, I think Metal Gear Solid 1 is just so iconic. I think just it's that introduction to this kind of this character and the whole story, I think, is just pretty solid. Like I'm sure it's probably plagued with loopholes or potholes.
Yeah, of course.
I think everything is never really watertight. But I just think, like, for me, I think Metal Gear Solid 2 was probably one of my favorites. I didn't really play 3. I think 3 was Snake Eater, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, correct. 3, I believe, is the prequel. So 1 and 2 are chronological. 3 goes back, like, 6 years before number 1 or something like this.
Yeah.
I believe.
And I think there's Peace Walker as well, but I think Peace Walker only came out on the PSP, if I'm not mistaken.
This is where my knowledge of Metal Gear Solid gets a bit hazy, because I know there's like DLC basically for MGS3 as well. So there's like, same way you have like Metal Gear Solid 1 and then you have Metal Gear Solid VR Missions, which is like this extra content game, you know?
Yeah. Like I don't remember. I know I've played a little bit of Metal Gear Solid 3. I believe that starts and you're kind of in the jungle.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it goes back to
Zanzibar, which is mentioned a lot in the first game.
Yeah.
So I think it's the story where the Grey Fox is and stuff.
So this is Snake Eater. So I think this is the remake that's coming out. It's either this year or next year it's going to be coming out. Right. So again, you know how I feel about remakes, but I think this actually is completely made from the bones up, so it will look phenomenal.
Yeah. This will be a remake, not a remaster.
Yeah, a complete remake. Ground Zero, I played a lot of Phantom Pain. Ground Zero, I wasn't too impressed. I believe that came in 2 parts as well. I think there was part 1 and part 2 of Ground Zero.
Okay.
Or else it was Ground Zero, part 1 came out and Phantom Pain was part 2.
Oh, okay.
It's completely different. They're kind of like map-based, so you have a large open area and then you just run missions for that area as such. It's not...
Sure.
Phantom Pain, it is a lot of fun, actually. Phantom Pain is fun, but I just don't think... It's a completely different class of Metal Gear Solid game.
I did also play 1 and it was... you had like this oil rig as your home base kind of thing.
That's Phantom
yeah,
Pain.
tendon pain. So, and it was very different from MGS1. And then I just wasn't that invested. Same as many games, you know. I'll come back to it at some point, but.
You come back to it at some point.
Anyway, thank you for the submission. On to the next one. You're getting all the weird names, Jamie. I'm really sorry about that, but
you
go for
a nice little three-letter. But just to say on Edo's comment as well, like, I totally agree when he kind of said, you know, Psychomantis is like dark magic, and you're like, what the hell? Like, yeah, where does this kind of... It is your kind of, like you said there a while ago, Garrett, like your first boss you're facing against, and then suddenly you're thrown in with this guy who is... levitating, he goes invisible, he's moving objects. The same when you hit Grey Fox, you're like, this is a stealth ninja. You're like, what is going on?
You feel very human fighting all these people, you know? You do.
How am I beating them all?
Thank you. And right, on to the next one.
All right, so this is, I'm going to say Nurkmes. Thank you so much.
The silent
apologies for butchering your name. He goes, so he says, most of my memories around Metal Gear Solid 1 are emotional, and it's just part of the foundation of who I am. Right? I'm from 1989, same as myself, and got the game for my 10th birthday, and it's stuck with me since. One funny story I can remember is, since English isn't my first language, there was a lot of dialogue that went over my head for the first time I played through it. Psychomantis in particular, I didn't understand what I was supposed to do, so I ended up beating him without switching controllers. I later learned that was the MVP way of doing it. I'm so proud of my 10-year-old me for just powering through ignorantly. I think it's not to say that if you were offered the easier way that you'd always take it. I know a lot of the times I tend to play games on the hardest difficulty.
Kind of
to punish myself.
But this is funny, because I was trying to beat the game without the controller switch to like get this alternate way through, and I couldn't figure it out. So fair play for like not even understanding the language fully. Like, there was stuff in this game that went over my head because I just didn't have the vocabulary at 10 years old, you know.
And me too, because I tend to skip cutscenes.
Yeah, so you were completely lost. But yeah, thank you for the submission. The next one is from Avojan. I'm not sure which. He says, one of my earliest gaming memories was playing Metal Gear Solid with my best friend who had a copy. I obtained a demo disc from Pizza Hut and remember playing the opening level countless times on my own. I found myself fascinated by the AI even at that age and how realistic it all felt. Even with those pixelated graphics, which at the time looked ultra realistic, my friend and I shared a copy of the game, and I would pass back and forth a memory card with our saves. And one day he told me he lost all of our saves. I was truly gutted. When I asked him how such a thing could happen, he told me that his grandmother had cleaned the inside of his memory card with cleaning solution, and somehow that wiped the saves. I'm sorry. This just sounds like such a bullshit story. Like, I mean, from the point of the view of the friend that his grandmother literally wiped the saves off. I still don't believe that's possible, but I remember we got together one weekend. Oh, I'm sorry, that just set me off, man. We got together one weekend and spent countless hours getting back to where we have left off. Great times with an even greater game. From Avo from Los Angeles. That's pretty cool. So
he literally got his memory card wiped.
Man, that just set me off on one there. That's like if my friend came back and told me that his grandmother literally wiped. This is the equivalent of my dog at my homework.
That's so much worse. That's just too oddly specific.
Like, why would his why would the grandmother even have the memory card to be clean? Oh, man. Hey, Jamie, you can start with the next one. Sorry. Okay.
Oddly specific. Yeah. You're going to pick up this tiny gray card and just spray a cleaning solution. Man,
and that, like, how would that
just be better?
Oh, man. That's such a lot of bullshit.
Just saying it just wiped. If he just said, no clue. Just
it reminds me of
one
just
minute,
very
gone
very
minute.
Quickly. It reminds me of a story of my friend borrowed Sonic 3 from me on the Sega. And Sonic 3, you could save the games on the cartridge. And I called over to him, and I was like, "Oh, I need Sonic 3 back." And he didn't want to give it back to me. And I was like, "No, I want it back. Here's your game back. Give it to me now." And he was getting all pissed off at me. And then he was like, "All right, just a second." And he ran upstairs, and I could hear like the Sega starting up, and then I could hear him like ding, 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 like going through the menu, you know. And then I was like, what's he doing? And then I got back the game, went home, and he had deleted every save file off the game. And I was just like, you
Arsewipe.
Yeah, and I said it to him. He was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, I heard you. And he was like, no, I didn't do anything. I was like, what can I do? But yeah, sorry, man. That's such a funny story.
Rage and murder. Okay, quick coffee sip and I'll read the next one then.
Okay, so the next one. You got another easy name. Well, actually, this one isn't too bad.
This comes in from, I'm surprised at how long the submissions are actually. They're quite.
They're actually, like, thank you for everyone who submitted because there's such thought got into it.
Yeah. This comes in from Ratchet Fexer. I didn't get into Metal Gear Solid 1 until after playing 2 and 3. I went backwards. I thought going back would be boring, but I was blown away by how tight and focused the original was. There was something really cool about seeing the roots of all these mechanics I'd loved later. It felt like opening a time capsule, but everything still held up. Or held up, wait, like how the game is from 1990. How is this game from 1998? Wait, 8-bit, that's a new thing. I was just about to read into the next one.
Sorry. I'm still thinking about the funny story from a while ago.
He's still laughing anyway.
That's another thing. Like, how is this game from 1998? You know? It's insane.
And the thing is, how big was the game?
And it's actually from 1997 if you base it on the Japanese release, which is just
how large
insane.
Is the game?
I have no idea. 250 megabytes.
It was a gig in size spread across two discs.
That's mad. 500. I think but the still, second like, disc think, was slightly think, smaller, but still, that's like insane.
Think of the content, like just the sheer. You know, then that's a good solid 8-hour game.
And yeah, like
game.
It's not that graphical today looking back on it, but if you upscale it to 4K, it's actually quite good. Like it's not
You
bad.
Know, and I don't mean to be harsh. I don't mean to be harsh when I say, oh, the game looks this or it looks that. Like the game looks exactly how it should.
Yeah.
You know, it runs seamlessly. I don't think I actually ran into any, you know, clipping, like
no.
unless it was intentional.
No.
You know, even the cutscenes, everything was in sync with the audio.
Yeah.
Sounds all worked as intended.
There's
you
no
know,
shaders
you were actively,
disappearing. There's no nothing.
And the AI always, you know, they got to you, you know. It's not a case that you could sneak up behind them and try and get around them.
Even the AI never got, like, glitched or stuck anywhere, which is... And, like, I played that game a lot and watched a lot of people play it, and I've never seen anyone have, like, a glitch where the AI is, like, stuck in a box or a wall or anything. It's weird, no?
I'd love to know, actually... Out of all the people who've submitted, have they obviously completed the game, but did you do another playthrough to get the specific camo. Unlocks? To
yeah.
get the camo or the bandana?
Or the bandana,
or
which
what did they think of?
Sure, sure.
Did they just go around and bully all the soldiers
yeah,
in camo?
Yeah. So this one is from, thank you for the submission, Ratchet Fixer. This next one is from Bit Pilgrim. And this is, he says, or she says, I first played Metal Gear Solid 1 on an old CRT in my garage, sitting on a beanbag with the door open during a thunderstorm. I was trying to sneak through the snowfield and the thunder hit just as the guards spotted me. I screamed and turned off the console, genuinely thinking I'd summoned something. No joke, I didn't play again for a week. Man, the visual imagery in that comment is insane. Imagine, like, we used to have, like, camps and garages when we were kids, you know? So it would be, like, raining, yeah. and we'd have the garage door open, and you'd hear, like, the rain hitting the metal door and stuff. And it just brings me back to that, like, cozy feeling as a kid, you know? We never had CRTVs in the garage, but, you know, some people were lucky.
No, they wouldn't be in the garage. Only kind of just jogged a memory. I remember, do you ever play The Thing? It was a horror game.
Yeah, sure. I played the PS2 right. one.
And it just because this kind of jogged that memory, I played The Thing with a childhood friend and I was in the attic of my house. So that was my bedroom, was mm-hmm. up in the attic. So obviously a slope roof, so the pitch of the roof comes down, so the TV would be kind of in under it. So if you were to stand up, your head would hit the roof.
Yeah, sure.
Or hit the ceiling. And I used to have a two-seater sofa facing the TV. And me and the buddy were playing this game and we were scared shitless. And there was one jump scare that we both got. Didn't he stand up and he put his head through the plasterboard?
Jesus Christ.
He's like, he's over 6 foot tall, I'd say. But yeah, that just kind of jogged a memory.
It's weird how a lot of these comments are triggering like completely unrelated memories from different games.
So our last submission comes in from VHS Reaper. Goes the first time I saw Metal Gear Solid was at my cousin's house. He goes, he was way older than me and let me watch but not play. How harsh. I vividly remember the codec calls and thinking it was some real government stuff. He told me not to talk during the cutscenes, like it was a movie. I was like 8 at the time, because, and that was the moment I realized that games could command silence like a film. I didn't even touch the controller, and I still count that as one of my favorite gaming memories.
That's true as well. That was the first game where it was like proper cinematic. Because you had like, what did we play before this? You had like Tomb Raider. There was very few cutscenes in Tomb Raider.
Very few cutscenes.
Yeah.
Was there actual cutscenes?
There was. They were like these weird, janky CGI cinematic things that were completely separate from the gameplay, but they didn't have like these rendered in time gameplay scenes like you do in Metal Gear Solid.
But like, I think just a lot of my memories, like I said, when I used to play this with my brother, like I was actually sitting down and watching him play.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm the same. Like I watched my friend play, who obviously had the game and was way more experienced, and he learned to play from his dad. And like, I was completely lost in the game. It wasn't for a 10-year-old. It just wasn't, you know.
It looked really cool,
and the music and everything was great. But man, I'm still thinking of the comment from
got his memory card wiped by his grandma.
The memory card wiped at the grandma. It was just fucking hilarious. So yeah,
that's it.
That was pretty cool seeing everyone's memories from the game. A lot of like triggered stuff there for me. So yeah, this is a long episode, by the way. We're nearly at like 2 hours. We'll have to edit this down a little bit. we'll try and get it down to the 1:30 mark. So yeah, we'll leave it there. No idea what our next episode is going to be. Could be absolutely anything. And yeah.
That concludes this episode talking about Metal Gear Solid 1 and our playthrough through it. Thank you everyone for your submissions. It really helped and it gave us a bit of an insight to your own gaming experience. So thank you so much for listening. All the best.